Well, hello, everyone. It's the roundtable. It's a Thursday morning. It's 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. The panelists are sitting down and making noise and rattling things and shuffling papers. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, and we're joined by a semi-illustrious panel this morning. Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Am I the semi or the illustrious side?
You be the judge. Mike Spain from the Times Union. Mike.
Good morning.
And Ira Fussfeld, the... long time and now publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Nice to have you here, Ira.
Hello, everyone. Nice to see you all.
So two of you just got done recording the Media Project with the great Rex Smith. And one topic that Dave Gustina, who was in here, told me about was an interesting news piece. And I must say I haven't seen it, but you guys I know talked about it, that news organizations tend to have a much higher incidence of mental health issues. Well, of course they do.
Well, yes, and there are reasons for it, obviously. First of all, there is, you're a young reporter, male or female, and you have a family at home and you're supporting them. And every day we're reading that some of these newspapers are on the block. The Daily News, Dolan from Cablevision said, I'll give you a buck for it plus the debt that is owed. And Ira has an interesting take on that. And then also, because people are being fired and walked out the door and walked the plank, it would make... And then... Finally, you got to cover some of the worst catastrophes ever and see dead people and see a two-year-old got hit by a brick in New York City. That really is terrible stuff, and you're exposed to this. Others of us can sort of, you know, sort of not be as directly confronting those terrible things.
Now, Ira, is this just about print news or news organizations
in
general?
Well, because print is most important, that's all we talked about.
Now, you know that's not true.
Yeah. But
Take it back.
But I do think that the as we discussed, and we should use this as to tease the program and not get so much more into it.
All right, thank you, Ira.
But it's always been that way in the newsrooms. We do experience a lot of stuff that can make you stay up at night. And then you compound it, as Alan was just mentioning, about now the great pressures that many people in newspapers are facing about whether they're going to walk into work and you're going to be told it's their last day. So there's just – it's not a stretch to be to hear that there are mental problems.
Well, I mean, plus the bosses tend to be domineering, tyrannical.
Maybe. I thought that was only in public radio.
Oh, ouch. Okay, hey, by the way, I forgot to give you the email. It's roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org if you want to weigh in.
My next-door neighbor stopped me yesterday. He said, that Ray Graff is terrific.
Well, he is.
You know what I really like about him is that, you know, he's always picking on you.
What?
Yeah, you know, like, but there's subtle sort of picks, like what you just did, which is to talk about how the bosses are tyrannical and mean-spirited. Well,
but I don't think of you as a boss. I think of you as
a colleague.
Kind of an avuncular sort of presence.
Avuncular presence.
Doesn't avuncular mean fat?
No. You're an elder statesman, an older relative, if you will.
Oh, you see? With my Uncle Jack, my mother always said, listen for the third sentence, right? The third sentence, he says, and you know, sort of an elderly
well, he
president.
He started out by calling the three of us semi-illustrious.
He did, but he meant you two were the illustrious.
Oh, I see. Well, I did. The truth is the ultimate defense.
Draw your own inference, if you will.
So when can you listen to the fuller
conversation? Oh, excellent point. 6 p.m. Sunday, 3 p.m. Monday, right here on WAMC Northeast Public Radio. And anytime on the web at WAMC.org.
I'll tell you what, you know, yesterday Judy Patrick was here and she kept us on point. And now
that.
Mike Spain is in the same chair, you know, keeping
it's the
show.
Print journalists, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. We always we always can focus in on the missing elements.
I must confess, I'm a little tired. I stayed up and watched the
you
end of Letterman.
I did
last
too.
Night. And what'd you think, Ira?
Well, let me preface this by saying a couple of things, if you've indulged me. One is I thought I was the biggest Letterman booster and that I'd ever met was, you know, and Joe Donahue exceeds me. He really
sure has.
And the 2 hours that he did yesterday after the panel was just tremendous.
Wasn't it nice?
It was really very well done. I thought that the Letterman finale was just right because it was Letterman not being
emotional.
Crying.
Yeah.
And he did his pretty much normal show. The top 10 had celebrities in it. It's not the first time he's done that. I just thought it was just the right ending for the kind of show that Letterman has done all these years and the kind of personality that he is.
Who was the guest?
He had no sit-down guests. He had 10 guests do the top 10. The final sit-down guest was the night before. He had Bill Murray, who had also been his first guest.
Yeah. And he was back last night.
He was back last night for the top 10. No, not last night.
I'm glad I didn't watch.
No. It was just very well done. And CBS allowed it to run in its entirety because it ran 17 minutes over.
And the closing montage was worth the wait.
It was really tremendous. And you've got to record it and watch it because it's so – by so fast.
What
they showed
30
they showed 35 years worth of pictures in about 2 minutes.
It was great. Yeah. And you know, I watched probably every episode for the first 10 years. After he made the switch to CBS, I watched much less sporadically and very rarely in the last 5 or 6 years. Well, but we watched Nicole and I stayed up and watched both last night and the night before. Yeah. And it's amazing how unemotional he is. He is walled off.
Well, he's good at it. I mean, he had moments during the course of the years, particularly after his heart surgery, after 9/11, when he had that sex scandal where he showed something inside of him. But I think I've seen, he did 6,000 shows, and because of the VCR and the DVR, I think I may have seen all of them.
No.
For me, it's a void. You look forward to seeing him and et cetera.
Where do you find the time?
It's of course the VCR and the DVR, and you can either binge watch on the weekend or
you need to make choices, and you flash through the commercials.
That's right. 60 minutes is only about 42 minutes of airtime.
So I figure Letterman will be bored in about 3 months. Alan, get on the horn. Get him do a weekend show here.
Oh, that's right. You see, I think you guys all missed the point. I've talked to many, many of our public radio listeners, and none of them to a person, watch television.
Mm. Oh, I disagree. I disagree.
I don't think they're admitting. It's like when you say when people go to polls and they'll tell the pollsters what they want to hear.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it does underscore the challenge that Stephen Colbert has before him when he takes over that slot in the fall, I guess.
He's going to have a different kind of an audience.
I think the
reason Letterman got out, he said it, is that he couldn't compete in today's world where the Jimmy Fallons, were doing less serious talk behind the desk and more fawning, F-A-W-N-I-N-G, and more games. Let's play, password.
Entertainment, basically.
And Letterman was a throwback to the old talk shows while he still was able to have fun.
He had plenty of insane bits.
Yeah. However, while you guys were getting ready to watch this stuff, Roselle and I happened to turn the TV on last night, and we saw Johnny Carson doing a biography of James Stewart, which
I've seen that originally done for
PBS, I believe.
Yes.
It was so superb.
Yes.
But you ask a kid on the street now, who was James Stewart?
Or Johnny Carson.
Yeah. You make a point.
Fame is fleeting.
Indeed. And we'll leave it there. We'll take a break. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll get to some more serious topics in a moment.
Support comes from Berkshire Stringed Instruments School of Lutery, Windsor Mill, North Adams, Massachusetts. Working to guide students through hand-building guitars, mandolins, and ukuleles, BerkshireStringedInstruments.com for class registration. Barnstars Antiques at Rhinebeck, a Memorial Day tradition presenting over 120 exhibitors of furniture, jewelry, fine art, Inuit and Native American artifacts, appraisals, and more. Saturday and Sunday, Barnstar.com. And Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, Roger White at Marble House Project presenting The Contemporaries Friday at 5 p.m. Northshire.com.
Well, all right. That's some interesting bumper music there, Hopper. 21 minutes after 9 o'clock, it is the Roundtable. It is a Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. And joined today by Ira Fussfeld, Mike Spain, and Alan Shartok. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Islamic State Group now in full control of the famed archaeological site Palmyra, or Palmyra, depending on which broadcast you watch. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the extremists overran the site just to the southwest shortly after midnight Wednesday. One activist says ISIS now controls the ruins at Palmyra, a UNESCO World Heritage Site famous for its 2,000-year-old towering Roman-era colonnades and other ruins and priceless artifacts. So the question is, what to do? Two cities in 1 week, Ramadi, right, earlier in the week, and the Republicans... several of them running for office or thinking about it, saying we need combat troops on the ground. So seems like this discussion now coming full circle. It never seems to go away.
I look at it from a different angle, not to denigrate the seriousness of this, but what strikes me is that I think there was a sense until these developments of the last few days that the ISIS was on its heels. And if my premise is correct, how did we find out that ISIS was on its heels? Because our government was telling us.
Well,
that.
That's true.
And now we're finding out all of a sudden that ISIS is not only not on its heels, but it's taken over Ramadi and it's taken over Palmyra. And it makes those of us who were at the very least skeptical about what government says on a day-to-day basis even more so. Does anybody buy that? What can we believe about in our government?
It does seem to swing. It doesn't seem to go down the middle. It seems to swing. As you say, one day you think that it's being contained and that these are just an insurgent group that has had some luck and we're cutting them off. Last weekend, the U.S. government made a lot of hay about how U.S. forces went in and I guess killed a key person in ISIS who brokers the sale of oil, which literally fuels their war, both with money and with fuel, and gained great intelligence. So you had a sense just a few days ago that we had turned the corner and this is under control. And now it looks like it sounds like they're about to topple
right.
Both Syria and Iraq. And you're right. The drumbeat is going. More and more people are stepping forward, and especially the Republicans.
Including George Pataki, by the way.
Including former New York Governor George Pataki, who next week is expected to announce that he will enter the race for the nomination for his party to run for president. And he is now saying on the record that we need boots on the ground. He's joining the John McCain types and some of the
more. I asked Alan before we went on the air this morning who George Pataki's advisors are, because when I see George Pataki commenting on ISIS, I think, what does George Pataki know about ISIS any more than the average Joe on the street? So I'm curious to know who his handlers are.
Well, how much less does he know than the people running
exactly.
the show now?
Exactly. You're profound, Ray. Even though that you're tired, that's exactly right. I said exactly that, Tyra. Yeah. You know, we can all sort of figure this out. We had Congressman McGovern on the other day on the Congressional Corner. He made a great point. He said, listen, this is between these folks. They're killing each other. They're fighting each other. Let them work it out. It doesn't help for the Americans to inject themselves and to put boots on the ground. And I agree with that. I think he's exactly right. But, it's a very dangerous and volatile situation.
Well, it's a little late now. To have boots on the ground when we had boots on the ground. Basically, it would seem to me that the Iranians now have moved in, and any sort of counterinsurgence is being led by the Iranians. So our influence is gone.
Well, that's the narrative among the Republicans, many of the Republicans who are in the field for the nomination to run for president.
But is that not an empirical fact that our troops are no longer there?
Yes, our troops are no longer there. And now the shift has gone from blaming George W. Bush for getting us into that mess in the first place to President Obama for responding to the widespread American popular opinion that we should get out of there
and
as
Iraqi,
quickly as possible.
I might add.
Iraq, right.
I mean, they wanted us to go as well, the leadership there.
Oh, sure. And there was no friendly relationship between the U.S. and Iraq and efforts to keep ground troops there, even on a, just a small presence there was rejected by Iraq. They really were warming up to Iran. We kind of delivered Iraq to Iran. I mean, it's when you look back at it, it's just a catastrophe of one mistake after another. And how do you and the point is, I don't know the answer. The point is, what do you do now? Do you now say, gee, we should have gone back in? Oh, we never should have gone out. We should have gone back in. What do you do now? What can you do now that will have any impact, any measurable impact and positive output, put more American lives on the line, and then 6 months from now say that was a mistake and then pull them out? You know, it's a very difficult and dicey situation to be in. I mean, ultimately, one of the narratives that many politicians are saying is that the Iraqis, the people in the Middle East, have to work this out. It probably will end up as three different countries, you know, Kurdistan, and it will then the rest of Iraq will be cut between the Shia and the Sunnis. But how that's going to happen and whether we can have any role in that is really a question.
I don't know what the appetite or the will of the American people are to get into a fight which is unwinnable. I mean, you know, in the end, it's unwinnable. If the people there don't want, if they want to live under, you know, a strict and self-serving Islamic regime, then, you know, I don't know that we, sitting over here, have the right or the ability to say, we think differently for you.
The American people will get behind military insurgency if they are convinced by the people who we've put in charge that it is a threat to us, a direct threat to us, what's going on over there, much like we were told Vietnam was a threat to us, much like we were told that Iraq was a threat to us after 9/11. Mm. And now, again, can we believe them? I mean, we see what's going on with ISIS. We see with the remnants of Al-Qaeda. We see what's going on in places like Somalia. If the government got up today, figuratively, and said, we've got to go in because if we don't, they're going to be on our shore tomorrow, should we believe them? Because if they're right, then the American people will have an appetite for war.
I go back to your point about the stream of information we get through the media, and basically the main conduit is in fact the government, and the assertion was that we had them on their heels, and now two cities in one mm-hmm. week taken by mm-hmm. ISIS. And so how do you get a firm belief anymore?
You don't.
Post-Vietnam.
You don't in a skeptical world, and the people have a right to be skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, Vietnam proved one thing, and that is that we look back at it now and we know that we misunderstood what the intentions of the North and South were. We misunderstood their relationship with China. We just misunderstood the whole thing. If we could have some confidence that we understand what's going on in the Middle East, it might drive some policy that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But what if we do understand? What if ISIS are terrible people, and they are terrible people?
No question.
What if we understand it? That's the question. What do we do then? I think we blew it with the Vietnamese. I think you guys are exactly right. But it was geopolitics were different at the time, and you know it's hard to go back. But here, there are these terrible people. They cut people's heads off. They destroy monuments. They do this. They do that. Does it really make sense for American kids to lose their lives by going over there? That's the question.
Let's take a break. It is the Roundtable on WAMC. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We're joined by Ira Fussfeld, Mike Spain, and Alan Chartok. And hopefully you, if you want to weigh in on things we've talked about today. Coming up, a little a forward promotion, as we call it in the biz. We'll talk about Osama bin Laden's reading room. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Thank you for the interstitial music in Beretta. We appreciate it very much. It's 9:33. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. And boy, we're having a lot of fun today.
Beretta, is that the guy with the parrot?
Yeah, you remember that show?
Sure.
That music, all you needed was a wah-wah pedal, and you had the coming up, Act 3 of Beretta.
Yeah. Yeah,
NPR people don't watch TV, so forget that reference.
We won't get into the fact that Robert Blake, who starred as Barreto, used to be one of the Little Rascals.
Oh, you see, that's Ira
Fussfeld.
He
also got himself into a lot of trouble later on.
Yes, he did.
Involved in a murder trial.
Yes.
And Mike Spain is over there, and Alan Chartok is over there, and Alan is the keeper of the email. Here.
But what happened to the parrot is what I wanted.
Barreto's bird?
He flew the coop.
Okay, Jeff says, Muslims in the Middle East used to be the most scientific-minded, civilized, and advanced culture in the world until the Crusades. The West could be interpreted as the original aggressor, but we're both at fault for the current situation. And Bonnie says, folks, we were misled in Vietnam, if you remember, the Gulf of Tonkin. We were lied to. And that's from Bonnie. And Colleen says, Your comment on what Pataki knows versus, it says, go Ray. I'm sorry, I have to read the headline. Go Ray.
Uh-huh.
Your comment on what Pataki knows versus anyone else, spot on. While my personal belief is Pataki is foolish to enter the race, his expertise and naivete on all issues is about on par with those running the show at present. Not this show, I think.
I think she has a pretty clear point.
P.S. Joe's special yesterday was so enjoyable.
Wasn't that nice?
Yes, and it was. It was very good. And then, God, people are writing like crazy
good
now.
Good, man. Good. Read.
Okay. I'm trying to keep up here. Okay. This one's entitled Fools. The best and brightest fools sent my friends and I off to war in the late 60s. Exactly. No shortage of fools in U.S. politics today. Let the hawks send their loved ones over to fight, not other people's kids. When I hear fools like Pataki, et cetera, I don't like, you know, when we do that, but okay.
You're just reading it.
Yeah. I want to slap them up on the side of their head.
Ouch.
Ken says the best way out of the Middle East is to make oil irrelevant. Go Manhattan Project on alternative energy and molten salt reactors and conservation here instead of pouring billions more into a desert half a world away. And R says there were so much things were so much simpler in the old days. In centuries past, there were no polls or surveys of public opinion. Kings and queens would just invade with their armies and take over. Today, we have civilized debates about what to do with ISIS. But if these were the days of the Greek or Roman empires, ISIS would have been dealt with already. Well, you may remember a certain English king tried to go into the Crusades, you know, and take over and change things. And it didn't quite work out. Remember that?
I wasn't born yet.
No?
That's different. I didn't know that.
That was a shame.
Regardless of how horrible they and things they do are, I think the world historical threat they pose, it says world, but I have a feeling it meant worst historical threat they pose, is the possibility of a successful jihadist caliphate. And that's from George. And then Robert says, panel, saying that the people of the Middle East don't want peace is ridiculous. The common people can only vote with their feet by fleeing the contested areas and doing that by the hundreds of thousands of people. And it goes on, so we're not going to read more. And then Jeff says, we did that one. And let's go up to the beginning again. See, that's what I'm really facing here. Jeremy says, Ira's question resonates with me personally. Can we believe anything we're told by our government? The answer should be obvious. Why intelligent men sit and debate the merits of regurgitated stories from the mainstream media, read propaganda, is also a good question.
Oh, fine.
You
got to fill an hour, buddy. Give me a break.
Well, no. You're accepting the premise that that's all we do. We don't.
Oh, okay.
So we resent it.
Fine.
Collectively.
I resent that.
Ira resents it. Okay.
I resemble that.
Jim says, the best and brightest fools sent my friends and I off to war in the late 60s. We did that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did that one. You're so right.
What about the person taking you to task about NPR listeners watching TV?
Yeah, that was a good one. Here it is. I think it's Gil. To infer that NPR listeners don't watch television is ridiculous. I love and support PBS and NPR. And I also love television. That's Gil from Great Barrington. Hello, Gil. Have you ever heard of a word called sarcasm? You really think I would come on? The whole point I was trying to make is that we hear during a fun drive that people say I
some
never watch.
Some people do not like, watch. Some people do not have television. You are right,
sir.
It
was my little joke. Don't you get it,
Gil?
But
Alan watches The Rifleman. It's well known.
I do. And have made it quite clear again and again. Yes.
Well, okay. You're an everyman, really.
I'm everyman. That's it for now.
Terrific. I'm glad. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And, you know, in just about 15 minutes' time, we'll get an update on the lockbox. And the lockbox is vital to shortening the fund drive. And we'll talk about that coming up. But if you want to make a donation, a pledge, if you will, go to WAMC.org and click pledge now and you can get in the lockbox. We'll tell you all about it. Osama bin Laden, a voracious reader, apparently, of interesting things from Noam Chomsky, Woodward. They've unveiled some 80 documents and books and stuff, and the U.S. authorities calling it Osama's bookshelf. Now, what do you make of that, Ira? Did you check that story out?
I'm glad that he liked to read print. That's he didn't. I didn't know that he was into social media. I think it's fascinating. You know, I don't know how you guys feel, but there was always a sort of a sense in my mind that this guy was out there hiding in caves and had no idea what was being said or written about him on the this part of the world. And quite the contrary, he was up on stuff and was reading about what others were saying about the hunt to find bin Laden and what U.S. blunders had been made over the course of history. I just find it a fascinating thing. And I don't mean this to be funnier than I'm going to try to describe it. I just find this whole description of bin Laden, quote unquote, as a family man. I mean, here's a guy who had loving wife or wives and children. And he would get up every morning and go to work. And, of course, what his work was
international terrorism.
International terrorism.
Right.
There's sort of a human being element that comes out of this bin Laden, these bin Laden documents that I find interesting and fascinating.
And he read Bob Woodward's Obama's Wars.
Yeah.
Which mentions
bin Laden throughout.
Very, very interesting. And, you know, there's an AP piece on this, and I'm not sure it's in the articles I sent you guys for the show, but I'll read it for you. If President Obama or his predecessor thought fighting a war with coalition partners is hard, they might consider Osama bin Laden's frustrations. Among the documents gathered in the 2011 raid is a lengthy complaint about the difficulties of working with Arabs, Uzbeks, Turks, Russians of all kinds, Germans, and others in al-Qaeda's global jihad. And this is a quote from bin Laden. Unfortunately, there is so much chaos on the ground, he wrote. In general, we suffer from unjustified divisions and alliances, which I call the fake commandments. Sounds like any administrator of any organization trying to put various people together and make it work.
It does defy the whole notion that this is just, you know, a crowd of crazy people who live up in caves and are disconnected from the world and trying to blow us back into the Stone Age. It is a very sophisticated operation, and this proves it. He was leveraging and all the information that was available to the public and benefiting, of course, from the openness that we have in this country to discuss everything.
Why release it now, though, Alan?
For far greater minds than mine would have to answer your question. On that.
I had heard that the government was intending to release it all the while, but it takes this long for it to be vetted.
So it had nothing to do with Hirsch's piece?
No. Well, I was just going to mention Hirsch's piece because it follows up what I was saying earlier. I think that there has been a tendency to dismiss Hirsch's piece about the U.S. version of how they killed bin Laden as being not what they said. Hirsch, because he was the only one who was saying it. But Hirsch, that said, it has all sorts of credentials as an investigative reporter who has been accurate. And is this bin Laden story that he's posing more credible in light of what we were talking about earlier about the government not necessarily being open with us and honest with us?
Interesting. So you're suggesting that the reason they released it, to answer Ray's very provocative and good, insightful question, is the reason they're doing it is to answer Hirsch.
Well, it could be. Ray was suggesting that. I think it took this long for the process that they claim they have to go through, but perhaps that was the final push to get it out right now.
Right. The reason I couldn't answer your question, Ray, is I was still stuck on the listener who wrote the critical letter about, you know, guys sitting around reading newspapers and talking about the mainstream press. And I'm reminded of the story of the two ladies sitting in the nursing home saying the food here is lousy
and there's not enough of it.
Yeah. Right. Somebody's listening. Gotcha.
All right, roundtable at WAMC.org if you're listening and you appreciate the old jokes. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And then the one thing they didn't release from bin Laden's library was, of course, the porn.
They're still enjoying that in the home office.
He was an avid viewer of porn, yeah.
Well, maybe.
Well, according to the U.S. Intelligence.
Okay, and this gets into the whole releasing what and when. When they did the raid and killed him, and they said, well, we found all this pornography, it was leaked. And so the New York Post made fun of it. John Stewart made fun of it. to what end? Obviously, the U.S. government knew that that would happen.
Did they? Was there really porn there? Were they?
Well,
were
that's
they doing,
the question.
Were
I
they doing that to portray him as a degenerate, among other, besides being a mass murderer?
You know, and a hypocrite.
And well, of course, you know, it has been seen in by intelligence people that there have been secret documents embedded in pornography by some of these Islamic militants. So it's just possible that maybe that's why
that
it's
was
not
the way that they passed information back and forth.
Yeah.
Kind of shrouded in porn.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, not really.
It's completely possible.
I just think it's terrible that we have reached a place. For many people, they've always been in this place, but increasingly we've reached a place where we don't know who to believe about anything, including our most formerly trusted sources.
So we're
not talking about media. I'm talking about government. I'm talking about, you know, corporations. You know, when a corporation used to say this is good for you, we said, oh, this is good for you.
Yeah, well, cigarettes. It's a digestive aid. Enjoy. So, okay, so society is crumbling. Hey,
yes.
Mike, what's in the Times Union?
Well, you know, maybe we'll ratchet this up to a little more light fare here, but we have a story today about the village of Green Island, which is on the Albany County, the west side of the Hudson River across from downtown Troy, a very tiny village that has many nice attributes, but a problem related to geese. And the mayor
geese.
Of the geese.
Oh, I thought you said geeks.
Oh, well, no, geese. Geese that okay. leave droppings, that leave yeah. dirty
sure.
droppings
Canada
all
geese.
Over. Well, right, Canada geese. Yeah. I don't know where they're from, but they're called Canada
Quite
geese.
Quite right, Mike.
They may be U.S. geese.
Some of them hang around,
named
some of them
Canada
don't.
Geese, yeah. right, or they could be Canadians.
Let's
we
get
don't
Rich
know.
Guthrie on the phone.
But Ellen McNulty Ryan, who's been the mayor for a dozen years in Green Island, has taken it upon herself to use an incendiary device to scare away the geese.
Uh-huh.
And she regularly goes out.
Fireworks?
Yes, fireworks, a gun, that the kind of machinery that is used by officers of the, you know, the government brings
right.
in people when there's crows or other animals that
yeah.
they're trying to get rid of to scare them away. And she's been doing it herself, and police in Green Island have been doing it for a dozen years. And a couple of weeks ago, she evidently was doing it close to a school, and it startled some of the people in the school. Oh. And the superintendent and the school officials have asked her to kind of tone it down.
Cool.
But she wonders why it's even a story. But it is kind of interesting. It's
they always wonder why it's a story.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's nearly not much of a story in that
yes,
this
right.
does work. Maybe you just tell the people in the school, hey,
well,
by the way,
we'll
there will be a gunshot in a moment.
Right.
Do not panic.
Yeah.
Well, I've always admired her. I think she wants to do what's right. And as you know, the sister of the former congressman.
That's right, and the son of the great Jack McNulty, the late
former
Jack
sheriff.
McNulty, former yeah. sheriff in Albany County. And, you know, even back more than 10 years ago, she wrote in a village newsletter that, I swear this poop, that goose poop, a goose poops a pound a day. That means that every week, just 5 geese will have 35 pounds of goose poop in the park. You do the math and calculate how much poop that is.
Is this Common Core?
Yeah, this is right, Common Core curriculum. In other words, geese are a health problem.
And they are. And we
and
know
they
that.
Absolutely
from,
are.
And we know that at airports they're doing the same thing. They have dogs. They have these other devices.
Right. And the schools use you know, artificial dogs that spin around in the wind, and that has been somewhat effective. Some golf courses use real dogs that chase away the geese.
Oh.
But it is a serious problem in McNulty. The mayor has taken it upon herself to go out and try to scare them away.
Well, it would seem there would be an easy way to work this out, a schedule, if you will.
Well,
that wouldn't frighten the children.
Logical, but that's very logical of you.
But, I mean, this is a non-lethal way to
yes,
take care of the
geese. Yes, it's using pyrotechnics, basically.
Yeah.
Now, if anybody has something that they like to do, which of real import today, take a ride down Central Avenue and look up at the roof of WAMC.
Which roof?
Our roof at 318 okay. Central Avenue, and you will see a hawk sitting right up there.
Yeah.
People stop me. It is so lifelike. People stop me all the time and say, is that a real hawk up there? No, it's not. It's to keep the pigeons off the roof. And all I, because pigeons poop about.
Okay. Check, please.
Maybe now we're.
Well, the dogs, you mentioned the golf courses. Our golf course in Kingston about 10 years ago, this was a big problem, and they brought dogs in. And not only did it work short term, to this day, there's not been a recurrence.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the real question here is, what about the rights of the geese and the pigeons? Okay. I mean, they have rights, don't they?
Well, in the
and
village,
none of them watch television.
Years ago in the village of Scotia, they had to round up. They went to round up geese, and the plan was to kill them and then give their meat to the local food kitchen, and that was very unpopular because. Yeah. People.
Vegetarians.
Okay. I think we've exhausted this. Let's take a break. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back.
Support comes from the office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock. Orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry serving the Hudson Valley since 1986. WoodstockDentist.com. Berkshire International Film Festival presenting Meru, Peggy Guggenheim Art Addict, and Live from New York, May 28th through the 31st in Great Barrington and Pittsfield, featuring 80 independent docs, features, and short films, community screenings, and special events. BIFFMA.org for information. And the Homebrew Emporium, New Rochelle in North Greenbush, New York, West Boylston in Boston, Massachusetts, providing beer and winemaking equipment and supplies from beginners to professionals.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Thursday morning, 9:51 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We still have a good 8 minutes here left, or at least 8 minutes left on the Roundtable panel. Alan Shartok is here. Mike Spain from the TU. Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. And a couple of letters to read at roundtable@WAMC.org. And then we'll bring Megan Finnegan in and talk about the lockbox.
We really have to talk about the lockbox because there won't be any WAMC without it. But a related question from Robert was about fraudulent cancer charities. You missed the story yesterday. It's important to know that WAMC's generous listeners know to be careful when they donate. There are wolves out there, and that's a very good point. Yeah. You know what you're getting with WAMC. But there are charities which are being rounded up right now. People give them the money, and they use it for their own purposes and the rest of it. And so thank you for alerting us to that, Robert. And then there is nothing else.
Okay. Well, Alan, the fund drive begins June 1st. That is Monday. That is a week from Monday. Yeah. You'll be in the chair at 6 a.m.
As will you.
I'll say, Alan, the red light's on. Go. And we have this lockbox.
We do.
A brilliant idea that I came up with a couple of years
yes,
ago.
Yes, you did.
No. So the basic premise is, you put the money in a month or so leading up to the fund drive, and then you shorten the on-air drive. So all those people who say, oh, get back to regular programming, please, it happens a lot quicker.
That's right. Yesterday I got a letter that was critical about something or other. I don't remember what it was. It was a print letter, and we looked up the signature.
Yeah.
And guess what?
Not a member.
Not a member, which really teased me off. Because, again, what is it about some people that they can take the product without putting something back? We're building this barn together, all of us, and we always have. We read your letters. If they're critical, we still read them. But all I can say is, don't be stopping me on the street and saying, why is the fund drive so long? But all you have to do right now is go to WAMC.org. You'll see the lockbox, the real lockbox. You'll be able to, press on it, make your contribution. And by the way, things are going really well. Now, that is something that always surprises me. You can start 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and nothing happens. And then 2 weeks to go, wham! Now, the only question is, will we make it? Because we're getting close.
What do we have to make?
Okay, Megan's going to tell you right now.
Well, what's on the table is that we have a $10,000 challenge from Mr. Big, and we have a $7,500 challenge from First Niagara Bank, and they've said that if we can raise $375 in the locked box by the time the drive starts, they're going to give us that money to kick things off for the fund drive.
So we have little over a week, 10 days left, 11 days left.
Very
pretty close to halfway.
Yeah, and we had a great day yesterday. A lot of people pledging, and we're up to $193,625.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, very good. So we need another 181 to meet the challenge.
I am still unsure that we can do that.
No, you should be unsure, because it's a matter of will that we built this station together, and we made it happen. And, you know, I told somebody on the phone yesterday, I said, let me tell you the history of this place, and that is that we went to the money in this town. We went to the big money in this town, and we asked them for help, and they looked the other way. And so in the end, we had no choice except for everybody to put something into the common mix. And frankly, it was the best thing that ever happened to us. If you think about it, it was the best thing, because collectively we have learned from the very, very first day, from the beginning when there was no money and nothing, that we could do this if everybody did something. And that's been what happened. And the day we stopped doing that, it's over.
Okay. Right. And the lockbox is now active at WAMC.org.
Right. And any amount makes you a member of WAMC. Sometimes people don't know that, but we love everybody.
You're a member.
Every little bit counts.
And if you did it today and you'd done it a week ago, you'd be a member.
Yep. And you can become a sustaining member, and that way you're feeding the lockbox all year long.
So basically, we have 11 days left, and then once the fund drive starts, all the money in the lockbox counts on day one, and that's how we shorten the drive.
6 o'clock in the morning.
And it works, because we did a drive a year ago. I don't remember when it was, but it was 3.5 days.
That was just
for $1 million.
That happened to be the last drive.
Well, they all roll into one another, you know. You get up at that hour of the morning, it's very difficult. So there's an incentive too, right?
Oh, yeah. It will shorten the fund drive. We've seen it happen. It really does work.
But there's also a physical incentive for those who want to pledge $125 or more, he said, leading the witness.
See where he's going now?
He's
with time waning in the hour.
We have a fabulous stainless steel water bottle, and you can have it personalized to have your name put on it.
But it doesn't look stainless steel. It is.
It
looks white and nice.
It's got the logo.
It looks like porcelain to me.
It does, Mike. That is so well said. And it's got this sipping thing at the top so you don't spill it.
Yeah.
And you can get something written on it like, this is Alan's mug. Keep your hands off it.
Or, no, that's too many characters.
Too long.
How many characters?
It's only 15 characters.
Right.
Okay, so you could say...
Hands off.
Owls. Hands off.
Keep you hands off. All right, so Megan Finnegan, thank you. Once again, the email address is, I should say the web address is WAMC.org.
Yep, and you can't miss it.
You can't miss the pledge now.
And actually, you can watch it go up, too. It's really nice.
Oh, you mean the minute you put something in?
Oh, yeah, the minute
you have the satisfaction?
Well, you have to hit refresh.
Well, how many people in this world get the satisfaction of anything?
You're talking about the thermometer on the website.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but to make it move, you got to put like 10 G's in. So go ahead, put 10
G's
in.
No, because it shows you the number.
It
really?
Gives you the absolute real number, real time.
All right. Go figure. All right. Thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
Thanks, Megan.
All right. So thanks a lot for everybody being here. Ira Fussfeld, you know, it's always fun when you're here.
We have 30 seconds. Indulge me. Yeah. We lost in Ulster County, New York, a guy by the name of Lynn Kane. I know Alan knows him. He was a longtime Chamber of Commerce president. He was an education booster with the BOCES. And the people in the North Country who listen to this program up in Plattsburgh may remember him from years and years ago, because he used to be in TV sports and he was a broadcaster.
Oh, boy.
And he died Monday at age 85. Oh. Great guy.
What channel was he on up there?
I think he was with the NBC affiliate in Plattsburgh.
I wonder if he
many, many years ago.
Bird Verdan, who was a legendary weatherman up there.
I
went to Plattsburgh
don't
State.
Know, but he was quite something.
Alan is gesticulating.
I am. Man of Peace says, good morning. It's a shame that we can love the geese when they're in the water at play, but as soon as they come out of the water to do their business, we don't like them anymore. We like them when they give us pleasure and hate them when we have to clean up behind them. Gee whiz, it sounds like my marriage.
Oh, ouch. Thanks. And on that off-color note, we're going to call it a day. Mike Spain, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
We'll be reading the Times Union at timesunion.com, correct?
That's correct.
And Alan Shartok, as always, it's just been fun.
And you, sir, you are a great person at this show, and everybody says so.
Oh, okay, well, roundtable at WAMC.org if you'd like to concur. That's hour one of the roundtable, boys and girls. Hour two is up ahead.